You are listening to History Man, a project of ekbarnes.com, where we walk in the footsteps of heroes and proclaim freedom reigns. On today's episode, we're excited to have Command Sergeant Major Cabe from the South Carolina State Guard telling us one of his favorite stories about South Carolina history. And we know that our listeners, are going to be excited to hear what he has to say. Welcome, Command Sergeant Major.
Thank you, Eric. Good to be here.
Tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I grew up in North Georgia, and one day I was 21 years old, and I got this important-looking letter and didn't pay much attention to the envelope, but I opened it up, and the first line said, "Greetings from the President of the United States." And I thought, my goodness, people in my family didn't get letters from the President. And then I read the second line, and it said, "Your friends and neighbors have selected you." And that was the beginning of my experience with the military. So I went into the military, became an Army drill sergeant, did that for a while, and then I spent 38 years working for the Forestry Commission, and when I retired, I felt like I needed to do something else and join the State Guard.
Having recently gone through the State Guard training class, I have firsthand knowledge about your stories and your passion for South Carolina history and the work of the State Guard. Tell us a little bit about the State Guard.
Well, the State Guard is an unarmed branch of the South Carolina Military Department. Our role is to provide humanitarian assistance to the people of South Carolina in time of disaster. And usually that is hurricanes, tornadoes, ice storms. This last year, we have been heavily involved in dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic.
The South Carolina State Guard can actually trace their history all the way back to the 1600s. Is that correct?
Yeah. The first military presence in South Carolina was in 1670 with the Charleston Militia. Personally, I think that the State Guard goes back to 1776 when what we call now the state legislature said that we're going to have a statewide militia, and I think that's really where we came from.
The story we're going to talk about today actually came in 1776, June 28th, 1776, to be exact, the Battle of Sullivan's Island. Tell us your passionate story about Sullivan's Island.
Well, the thing that attracted me to that story was one man, and that was Sergeant William Jasper. The background of the Battle of Sullivan's Island was British were trying to take the town of Charleston, and the South Carolina militia took exception to that and didn't think that was a very good idea. So they built a little fort out on Sullivan's Island, wasn't about half done when the British ships showed up. And the British ships, 9 warships, 300-something cannons, started to bombard that little fort made out of sand and palmetto logs. Didn't have much luck with it, as a matter of fact, but during the bombardment, the flag, the colors of the 2nd South Carolina Regiment, they were flying up on the ramparts, and the flagpole was shot away. Now, most of us today wouldn't think too much about that. Flag went down, no big deal, you go on fighting the battle. A little bit different back then, because the regimental colors were the heart and soul of a military unit. And when the colors went down, it had a distinct impact on the morale of the troops. One man who was there, Sergeant William Jasper, knew that he had to retrieve the colors. He climbed across the ramparts, he grabbed the colors, climbed back up, tied them to a sponge staff, and held them aloft until a new flagstaff could be established. That man, that day, to me, wrote the book on courage, because he single-handedly rallied the troops. That day, the British ships decided it wasn't worth the effort. They backed off, and Charleston was saved, at least for a while.
I know in when we look at history, we have a tendency to glaze over the minutiae of the impact or each individual engagement. For instance, in this particular engagement, we think, okay, the British, the Americans, what kind of forces were we talking about engaged that day?
The obvious thing is that we had 9 British warships and 300 cannons out there firing on a little sand fort that had about 30 cannons. A couple of hundred men providing the defense of Sullivan's Island, and the idea that untrained, unseasoned militia people could fend off probably the greatest military power in the world at that time is significant to me. It says something to me about the spirit of the people of South Carolina.
I was reading somewhere that the British had right at 2,000 men in there, and that the Americans spread out along that narrow island had about 780 men spread out. It's not like they were combined in one area. In the fort itself, they may have had a few hundred. And of the ones in the fort, they didn't have that many rounds of ammunition either. But they're up against the British Army, the British Navy. We're not talking about loyalists here. We're talking about these were the prime battle warriors of the British Navy here that were coming to Charleston. Is that correct? Am I wrong in that?
Trained military people. And that, I think, was a very significant thing. The British thought that they could land. They had several troop ships in addition to all of the warships. And they thought that they could land their troops on what is now called the Isle of Palms and attack Sullivan's Island from there. And perhaps the Navy wouldn't have much to do. Didn't work out too well because they hadn't planned very well, and the water was too deep to get across the little spit of water between the Isle of Palms and Sullivan's Island. It was, to me, a major defeat for the British military, because we're talking about odds and ends militia troops, citizen soldiers who were facing down trained military people.
Let's talk a little bit about that. Richard Lee came in and surveyed the fort and surveyed the defenses of Charleston and was talking to General Moultrie at that time. What was his view on what should happen at Fort Sullivan?
Well, the Continentals felt like that Sullivan's Island should be abandoned entirely. And Colonel Moultrie said, no, we ain't going to do that. This is where we are making our stand. We're staying here. There were even plans to make bridges out of a bunch of boats to get off Sullivan's Island. Didn't have enough boats to do that to start with. The other thing, though, that I think is so significant here is this battle didn't take place in isolation. It was being watched by the citizens of Charleston. And going back to Sergeant Jasper and the flag, when the citizens of Charleston, sitting in their houses with their telescopes focused on the battle that was going on, they knew that their future depended on what happened on Sullivan's Island.
So when that flag went down, what did they think?
When the flag went down, they thought, it's all over.
Wow.
When Sergeant Jasper retrieved the flag and put it back up, it changed the complexion of the people of Charleston as well as the 2nd South Carolina Regiment.
Well, who was Sergeant Jasper?
That's a good question. Sergeant Jasper, depending on what expert you want to listen to, was an immigrant. He's born probably in 1750. He came to this country as a teenager, and some people say he was Irish, some people say he was German. And I'm not sure, I'm not in a position to know one way or the other.
You know what I say?
What's that?
He's an American.
He's an American. I didn't prove that. But anyway, Sergeant Jasper came and he served for a little while as an indentured servant just to pay his passage from Europe. And then he came south. Some people say he came to Georgia. Some people say he came to South Carolina again. Nobody knows for sure. But he wanted to bring his girlfriend home to where he was, and he needed money to do it. And one of the stories says that because the military was offering some pay for soldiers, he signed up to get the money to bring his girlfriend south so he could marry her. I have no idea whether that's the truth or not, but the thing that is significant to me about Jasper is he obviously was illiterate. And so nobody is especially sure what his name was. Some people say that it was Wilhelm Gaspar or something like that. And when he came into Philadelphia, whoever the accountant was that was writing all this stuff down just wrote William Jasper. He made his little X mark beside it, and that was all that was needed. But at any rate, he ended up in the southern United States, and I think that's a very significant thing. You know, after the battle, people recognized, the officers recognized Jasper's courage and the sacrifice that he was willing to make to retrieve that flag, and there are all kind of neat stories about that, but the one that can be fairly well validated is that the governor of South Carolina, John Rutledge, was so impressed that he gave Sergeant Jasper his personal sword as a token of his respect for Sergeant Jasper's courage. And Sergeant Jasper carried that sword for the rest of the of war.
As a paltry student of history, I do see at the end of battles, like at Kings Mountain, for instance, and at Yorktown, you had the officers of the defeated army giving the sword over to the leader of the victor. What is the significance here?
Well, I think it's a totally different story because when a defeated soldier relinquishes his sword, it's highly symbolic. In this particular case, the governor of South Carolina was recognizing the courage of one of his enlisted soldiers. And I think that was significant as well. It was significant in the other direction because Sergeant Jasper, in my opinion, changed the tide of the Battle of Sullivan's Island, and the governor of South Carolina respected that and recognized it.
It's interesting that you say that an enlisted soldier as opposed to an aristocratic officer. Most of the officers in these corps or in these armies in Europe as well as in the Americas at that time and even after that time were aristocrats who had money, came from money, and in many respects funded the group of people in their particular army or their command with horses or accoutrements or uniforms and that sort of thing. So the recognition of an enlisted man was unique.
It was indeed, and it wasn't until a few years later, really, when Baron von Steuben came to, in that terrible winter at Valley Forge, to train the Continental Army. Baron von Steuben was recognized as the father of the American NCO Corps. He recognized, even though he was an aristocrat, he recognized the value of the non-commissioned officer, the value of the enlisted soldier. But this was two, 3 years after Sergeant Jasper at the Battle of Sullivan's Island. But von Steuben defined the importance of the NCO and back to the business of swords. Von Steuben promoted the idea that NCOs should carry swords as recognition of their rank and their influence in the military.
So the flag that he put back up over Fort Sullivan during the course of this battle that he is known for, that valiant act, what was the flag?
Well, there's question there too. It was a dark blue background for certain, and it had what people would consider to be a crescent on it. Most people now think that crescent was a gorget, which is a piece of armor that was used in Europe to protect a soldier's throat. It had been adopted as a badge for the 2nd South Carolina Regiment, and William Moultrie designed the flag, blue field, and that crescent that really was a gorget on the blue field up in the corner of the hoist side of the flag. Some of the artwork that you see has the word Liberty emblazoned across the base of the flag. Some question about whether Moultrie's flag actually had that or not. But regardless, you had a blue flag You had a crescent that actually looked more like a cup on the original one. The horns of the crescent were pointing up. But it's the same flag that we have now. In 1861, the legislature of South Carolina designed a new, or adopted a new state flag, and actually it was the Moultrie flag with a palmetto tree right in the middle of it. Palmetto tree, once again, going back to the Battle of Sullivan's Island.
Interesting that Sullivan's Island played such a big role, not only in South Carolina, but that flag is one of the most recognized flags across the United States still to this day. Now, Jasper's legacy did not stop there.
Yeah.
Jasper continued on and led parties out and captured British soldiers and was constantly bringing them back into the American lines. Actually, in Savannah, passed himself off as a defector going over to the British side so he could get the layout of the enemy positions in Savannah, and then came back out and went back with the Americans to try to take Savannah. Tell us a little bit about your knowledge of what Jasper did after Sullivan's Island.
One of the stories is that he was offered a commission as an officer and he turned it down. I'm not sure how valid that is, but he was given what was called a roving commission, which allowed him to pretty much select his own troops. And usually he would have small bands of a half a dozen, 8 or 10 people, and make forays into the British lines to either take prisoners or scout situations or whatever. And like you said a minute ago, he was sort of a double agent, because at one point he passed himself off as a defector, stayed with the British for a couple of weeks, gathering all the information he could. Then he slipped out again and came back to report that to his headquarters. So he was an interesting person operating. We think about Francis Marion and the way he operated. Well, Sergeant Jasper was operating in much the same way on a smaller scale. But back to the flag. The flag is tied to Sergeant Jasper in yet another way. Savannah had been taken by the British. And Sergeant Jasper was part of the contingent that went to Savannah to try to take it back. And they besieged Savannah for a while, and that didn't provide any great results, so they decided just to storm the city. And once again, the regimental colors were in the front of the forces as they stormed the city. Sergeant Jasper was one of several people mortally wounded, trying to save the colors. When they were repulsed, Sergeant Jasper retrieved the colors. He was mortally wounded and died some days later. There's a statue in Charleston right now to Sergeant Jasper holding the flag. And I get emotional when I think about these things, when I talk about these things, because this is what America is about.
Well, Sergeant Jasper certainly represents the heart and soul of South Carolina and the heart and soul of Americans when you think about freedom and liberty, especially in that time. And I appreciate your telling us the story of Sergeant Jasper, and he is certainly worth telling. A lot of historians now have gone back to works like Moultrie's Memoirs of the Revolution and garnered some understanding of who Jasper was. I believe Jasper had a couple brothers that were fighting in the American Revolution as well, some of them fighting in different parts of South Carolina, and maybe some relatives even in North Carolina. But it's a fascinating story. He's a fascinating guy, and certainly an epitome of loyalty and heroism and the American way. So thank you very much, Command Sergeant Major Cade.
My pleasure.